Have your Bibles turned with me this morning to Psalms 27. What a great weekend to celebrate our freedom. Today I want to talk about whom shall I fear. One of the things about our freedom, we celebrate our freedom in Christ. Sometimes we're a little scared in celebrating our freedom for Christ. So today we want to talk about on whom shall I fear. In Psalms 27, you know, five-year-old Johnny, he was in the kitchen and helping his mom make supper. She asked him to go to the pantry. She said, "I need a can of tomato soup," but he didn't want to go there alone. He said, "It's dark in there, and I'm kind of scared of the dark. I don't want to go there." She asked him again, and he still persisted. He said, I'm just scared of the dark. I don't want to go in there." Finally, he said, "Okay, Mom, if you really want to." She said, "It's okay." She said, "Jesus will be in there with you." Well, he walked hesitantly to the door, and he kind of opened the door. He peeked inside, and he saw it was dark in there still, and he started to turn around, and he said, "I ain't going in there." All of a sudden, an idea came to his mind, and he turned around and peeked open the door once more, and he said, "Jesus, if you're in there, would you hand me that can of tomato soup?" And that's the best he could come up with. So, you know, like, you know, we all have our fears of something, don't we? For, you know, like Johnny, for you, maybe it may be the dark. I don't know. For others, well, here are just a few. Triskaidekaphobia, for instance, is the fear of the number 13. That's a kind of an odd name to kind of label that, but I'm sure many of you have heard this one. Arachnophobia is the fear of spiders. Dutch phobia is exactly how it sounds, the fear of the Dutch. I don't know if there are any Dutch here today, but fear of the Dutch. So there are a lot of things that you and I are afraid of, and there are a lot of other phobias, which I kind of found interesting. For instance, cyberphobia is the fear of computers. Ecclesiophobia is the fear of churches. So if you're scared of church, you have ecclesiophobia. Lunar phobia is the fear of, what do you think? There you go, the moon, Astrophobia is not the fear of stars, but it's the fear of lightning. And then chromatophobia is the fear of money. Europhobia is not the fear of Europe or things like that. It's the fear of the color red. I thought that was kind of odd. Homilophobia is the fear of sermons. So if some of you guys get scared of sermons, you have homilophobia. Pelophobia is the fear of baldness for a lot of you guys. And of course, phobophobia is the fear of fears. Now, before it seems like I'm being insensitive to a lot of those with fears of chins or politicians or otters or in-laws or poetry, I'll kind of tell you some of my own fears. I don't like standing on the ledges of buildings or climb steeples or look over edges of cliffs or anything like that, because my legs get so weak sometimes that it just seems highly improbable that I might just tumble over those things. Or maybe a gust of wind might just blow me over. You just never know. It's the same with really tall bridges. You know, if I'm driving my car over a really tall bridge, my blood pressure kind of goes up a little bit. Man, I get real tight knuckles on the steering wheel. I just dig it in. I just don't like those things. I don't like needles either. I don't understand how, with all the medical and technological advances that we have, that we're still unable to draw blood or give vaccinations without puncturing the skin. I mean, it's just counterintuitive to have to jab yourself with a sharp object. In other words, to feel better. I don't understand that. And yes, I work in a hospital. I can sit there and observe a live operation, watch them slice and dice someone up. I can watch them pop a mole off someone's head. I can watch them pull out their intestines, hold them up, and then sit there and watch them shove them back into someone. I can even watch someone poke someone else with a needle, but when it comes to me and needles, I have to look away. I mean, I've tried to watch a couple of times someone giving me a shot or drawing blood, but I always become pale and feel the cold and clammy sweats coming along, and I just start getting dizzy. But I could go on with other things, but that's enough for now. We all have these little fears, like cockroaches or needles, or even giving presentations at work. Some of you guys have those fears. But if we're honest, Those aren't the type of things that keep us up at night. But I wonder what is for you guys. I wonder what are those things, what are those fears that kind of consume your thoughts and your actions and cause you to react to a lot of things. Well, the psalmist in our text today was facing something similar. Let's take a look at it and see. In Psalms 27, verses 1 through 6, he says, The Lord is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of life, my life. Whom shall I dread? When evildoers come upon me to devour my flesh, verse 27, verse 2, my adversaries and my, chapter 27, verse 2, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host camp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war rise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. One thing I have asked from the Lord that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in His temple. For the day of trouble He will conceal me in His tabernacle. In the secret place of His tent He will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. And now my head will be lifted up above my enemies around me, and I will offer in His tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. And I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. And then skip down to verse 14. It says, wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. So our psalmist David here, he's surrounded by enemies and armies of war. And this might be literal or might be maybe even a metaphor, but yet he declares, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? It's one of those verses that's kind of easy to say in Sunday school, or maybe to other person or other people that you see that's going through a difficult time in their life. And it's easy to say, but maybe it's easy to say if you've never gone across the Golden Gate Bridge in a double-decker bus on a windy day, or if you have a fear of bridges or heights. You have nothing to fear there. It's easy to say that verse, except that we do. You know, we might not live in the Ukraine or Syria or Iraq where armies and enemies of war literally surround us, but there's other things that do surround us. There's things like sickness in our families, finding out the news that no one wants to hear. And then there's the fireworks that go off in our mind that we fear that our children make unwise choices. Oh, let's not forget this one. There's the fear of financial debt. Can't forget that one. That's a biggie. I mean, every month we feel the weight of past decisions and bills are due and creditors start to call and kids need feeding and you worry about those bills that you're unable to pay this month. You know, medical advances over the past 75 years have contributed to our sense of invincibility, our invulnerability, and our immortality. But many of you guys know firsthand that how fragile life is, right? I mean, when a loved one is informed that radiation isn't working, or maybe that when a transplant isn't available, or maybe that when your mom has to be put on hospice, or, you know, some of you fear living alone, making decisions for your own for the first time you've had to in your life, or maybe in decades. Fear of being forgotten, or maybe fear of being left behind or left out. Others may have a fear of your spouse leaving you, or your child on drugs, or perhaps even maybe your own secret addictions that you have. I mean, we all have fears in our lives, and fears are real, and fears are just part of being human. We aren't any of the worse for experiencing them. I mean, we're normal. It's part of our existence. An existence of fear and anxiety doesn't mean that our faith is any more the inferior. And the psalmist here isn't saying, David's not saying that we're not supposed to fear. It's that because fear is a very natural, if not unwelcome, part of our life. What he is saying that we don't have to fear. It's saying it's possible to move beyond ourselves, to see beyond the circumstances of our fear and to arrive at a place where there's hope and there's life-giving. The psalmist David says, despite his instincts to fight or flee in the circumstances, his soul needs another option because he's used to either fighting or running. And I need another option. And instead, he chooses to wait this one out. He asks in verse 14 if he could just dwell in the presence of God. And he understands that in the presence of God, he's going to find in verse 1 his light and his salvation. You see, his salvation isn't an escape from adversity. It's in the presence of God in the middle of his trouble, in the middle of his adversity, that it's his lifeline. That's where his difference is. And this is where many people take a quick out of life. But if you'll wait for it, and this is where David the psalmist penned, to dwell in the presence of God all the days of his life, to see the beauty of God, to experience of the richness of God, and to ask the questions of God, because it's in the presence of God where he is hidden, where David is hidden, and where you and I can be hidden, and where he is safe, and where you and I can be safe, that he has life. And when everything in life seems to be crashing down upon you, God lifts him up, and God can lift you and I up the same way. And the author concludes, David concludes in verse 14, he says, I am confident that I will see the goodness of God in this life. Not just in the hereafter, but in this life. He says, wait for the Lord, be strong, take heart, wait for the Lord. You know, I remember hearing this verse many times when I was growing up. Maybe I didn't grasp the reality of this verse because maybe it was in the flurry of my teenage years thinking that I needed a girlfriend to prove my masculinity about myself. Maybe it was because of the anxiety of school that I had to have a part-time job, so I wanted friends, not to be lonely, that I didn't grasp the real meat of this verse of waiting and taking heart in the Lord. Or maybe I needed it as I sat through a season of what to do during my senior year in high school, as I watched the end of my senior year approaching like a galloping knight heading toward me, yielding a joust with my name on it, knowing that the days of coming home to a comfy living room and plopping down on the couch with a bag of Cheetos, watching Gilligan's Island reruns, were slowly coming to an end. Yeah, fear of what I will do after school ends and adult life begins. This verse didn't really clear my anxiety up in that. My soul needed more than just this Bible verse. I needed to really understand what it is. And as David begins to focus on God, he sees that he really has no reason to fear. Because when he and also we begin to see and consider and think about who God is and what he'll do in our lives, we see that we really have no reason to fear. Because David asks this question, whom should I fear? Or as we would say it, what do I have to be afraid of? Because his focus on God has reminded him that the Lord is my light. And in our lives, as we're going through these troubling times, these things that seem to crush us and want to make us fear, it's compared to darkness. And because we feel lost or in need of direction in our light, in our lives, because fear is in this darkness around our lives. I don't know if you guys have ever walked in this sanctuary in the total darkness. But there's fear, and there's hesitation, there's noises, there's apprehension, plus an occasional toe stubbing. because you are fearful about making a wrong turn and walking into something. Corner of these chairs are pretty sharp. You know, I'll never forget the first and last time we played blind dodgeball in here with the lights out when Adam and I were over at ground zero. One of my less brighter ideas I had. The idea was for me to have a pen light, a little laser pen light, and at the signal, I'd have Spencer turn out the lights, and all I would do is I'd hold up a pen light, and I'd say, okay, guys, I'm just going to have a pen light and see if you guys can hit me. Well, at the signal, the lights were turned off, and the pen light was turned on, followed by a swift kickball or dodgeball to my gut. Game was over. I didn't like that game anymore. But there was a moral to the story. Doesn't take much light to shine in the darkness. When this place is totally dark, that pin light becomes like a beacon. And it's the same way in life. I mean, there are troubling and dark times, and our fears increase, and things will go toward the light. Even things that hurt. And just because you're holding a light up in a dark world doesn't mean that only the hurting is going to come running to you. Even things that hurt, there's some mean people out there also that's going to come towards you. But because we don't know what to do or which way to go and are in the dark, David's fear disappears because he's recognized that God is his light. Sometimes we try to be the light. We try to hold up a little flashlight. But David realized that God was his light in the dark and fearful times. God doesn't necessarily give David or give us the light, but rather he personally becomes our light because God becomes our personal guide through the darkness safely. God desires to have this childlike dependence on him, rather than just to give us a little flashlight saying, get out there and see what you can do with that thing. He knows we're going to get gut punched. And we finally come to him and say, I need you, Father. I got gut punched. Too often we miss this, God's reassurance and this continue. And instead of going to God sincerely, we keep trying to handle things on our own. And our own anxiety level just begins to increase. And I mean, when was the last time you were on your knees before God? You know, when my daughters were younger and they became frightened as a child, they usually ran to me or Kesha and jumped up into our arms and held on tightly, and they found comfort there. And this is what we need to do when we're overwhelmed. We need to, in our minds, visualize spiritually jumping into our Father's arms. Now, as grown men, we don't like to think of things like that. But I've been in situations where men have been so scared that they ran behind other men. So however you need to visualize it, you need to come to that place in your mind, in your spirit, and that concept, and grasp that for your Heavenly Father. But I'll tell you this. If you're not used to getting on your knees before God, you need to start practicing it. Because Romans 14:11 says, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So if you're not used to doing it now, here on this earth, get used to it. Because after this earth, you will be doing it quite a bit. You know, when I was a boy growing up, I'd often visit my grandpa in Arkansas during the summertime. He lived 9 miles off the main road, and he lived off this winding, dusty, gravelly road, rough in a lot of places on that road, and he led back to his cabin in a place called Wildcat Holler. And as you journeyed back toward the road, toward his cabin, you'd see many worn-out shacks, old, rusty sawmills, and long-abandoned two-room schoolhouses. Quite the picturesque thing. And one night as we were walking back to his cabin on that road after visiting a neighbor, a thick fog kind of settled in from the countryside, and it was just past dusk. Grandpa was walking home at a steady pace, And as I hurried to keep up with him, I remember being terrified, listening to all these night sounds that started settling in from the holler, and looking around and seeing the lightning bugs starting to light up the timber line right off through the woods, looking like eyeballs in the darkness. And he was walking along a steady pace along that gravelly road, and the soil was washed out in many places along this road, so it created uneven spots, and you could trip real easy, causing deep-worn gullies. And I remember asking him, shouldn't we be going a little slower, Grandpa? I said, aren't you kind of scared walking out here at night? And he just responded with, don't worry, your old grandpa knows the way. He says, there ain't nothing much to be afraid of here in the dark. He says, everything out here is just afraid of you as you're afraid of it. You see, what I didn't know, being that young, is Grandpa had walked that road for many years. Even when he was young, he'd ridden his horse and wagon back in the 30s and 40s with his brothers. And for years, he'd made many trips back and forth with his parents. And how often when I can't see the road of life and have felt that familiar panic rising up in my heart, I've heard the echo, still do, of my grandpa's voice. There ain't nothing to be afraid of in the dark because everything's just as much afraid of you as you are of it. Fear's a lot like that. It can make you think the worst when there's really not. Kind of like this woman in Arkansas who was sitting in her car in the parking lot when she heard this loud bang. And all of a sudden she felt this sharp pain in the back of her head, and she was holding her hands behind the back of her head when someone walked by and said, ma'am, are you okay? And the woman answered, she said, I've been shot in the head and I'm holding my brains in. And, well, it wasn't her brains, it was dough. You see, a Pillsbury biscuit canister had exploded in her back seat because of the heat, and it made a loud explosion and shooting the dough right there in the back of the woman's head. Sometimes a lot of our fears are like that. They're just unfounded and irrational. But more often than not, though, our fears are based on rational and well-founded reasons. And you may go through a lot of these things emotionally and through seasons of your life. You may go through trials of worry. You may go through trials of depression. You may go through trials of stress. And you may, while you're going through these things, you may need a chance again to breathe. You may need a chance to feel again. You may need a chance to hope again. And clinging to this verse or these verses on in the middle of that storm can help you to hold on and to trust God and to remember that God is near. This scripture reveals to us that it's in the waiting that God can begin to let go. And you can remember to let go and let God take control. And in our lives, when we put to the realization that true life, our salvation is found in the presence of God. And we can start to understand at that point that life is more than just of all that we've accumulated and all that we have, all of our sum of our money and our health, but the truest of our lives, the real selves, our real stuff that we're made of, is in the presence of God. And it's in the waiting. That's when we decide to wait that you'll find His goodness. It's in the richness and beauty, the presence of God. You know, a lot of our teens go to Falls Creek every year and they want to find God and they just wait to find and experience God, and they get so busy doing stuff and with all the activities and with all the fun stuff with each other, sometimes if they don't settle down and really wait on God, they'll miss Him. And a lot of them come back disappointed saying, Falls Creek just wasn't what I expected of it this year. It's because they just didn't have a chance to wait on Him. There's a website and an Instagram feed called Humans of New York. And every day, they upload about 4 or 5 pictures of random people in New York City. And with that picture, they include a little quote with the picture that sometimes breathes life into this anonymous face that they posted on the feed. And sometimes these quotes really aren't inspiring. Sometimes they're kind of tragic what they quote on them. But recently, there was a picture of this African-American woman in a bright blue Sunday clothing and was featured. And her statement had some one piece of advice to her readers that was posted on her picture. And the the little tagline simply read, "Have a relationship with God." And the photographer that took her picture and posted it followed up by asking her, he said, "When do you find it most difficult to have a relationship with God?" And of course she replied to him, she said, "When he's not on time." And it's easy to say that most of us have a hard time of waiting. We don't wait much for these days. It's when we have to wait, we get really frustrated. We get really grumpy about it sometimes. I mean, we've all been there. I mean, when was the last time you got excited about waiting at a check stand at Walmart? Huh? Or in the doctor's office, or in traffic on the highway. Waiting in traffic on the highway only to find out this rubbernecking was all about some guy sitting on the side of the road changing a flat. Or in a Netflix buffer. I mean, we don't even want to wait for food or the fast food. That's why we invented fast food. TV dinners and ramen noodles. I mean, Kraft macaroni and cheese even takes too long, so that's why we made Easy Mac. It's starting to make sense why we don't even want to wait for God. You know, I think the lady's right. I mean, by the way, that's the hardest part. Faith is waiting on God. I don't think we like to wait on anything. And by the way, that's where fear gets its fuel. We don't like to wait. And that's where fear gets its fuel. Because fight or flight is our normal reaction to fear. I mean, sometimes it's a healthy response to it, because if you don't fight or flight, you're going to get crushed. But it's not like that in every situation. Sometimes it can be fixed by fighting or flighting. Sometimes our souls need just a little bit more than that. Sometimes we wait because we don't have any other choice. Sometimes we can't speed up their treatment. Sometimes we can't raise someone from the dead. Sometimes we can't win the lottery to pay our bills that are due. But at other times, it can. Waiting can be fueled by our faith. And we choose it to spend waiting on God. Now, I don't want you to hear me saying this morning that waiting on God is some theological formula that's going to solve our problems. It isn't a magic wand that makes pain disappear. It doesn't teleport us to another dimension of faith that we can escape from. And so oftentimes we try to defeat our fear. We just make it go away by making or telling ourselves not to be afraid. I mean, you can't make yourself stop hurting by just telling yourself to stop crying. That don't work, trust me. But in waiting, we start to use our eyes and to see something beyond our fear and pain. Waiting on God is a conduit to a place of not fearing. It isn't easy, it's not instantaneous, and you don't have to do it. But if you wait, it'll give your faith a chance to grow and to discover and remember what it's like to breathe again. Some of you guys have got to breathe because you've been so fearful of things in your life. Spiritually. Physically. But if you wait, you can quit running from your diagnosis. You can stop fighting for the heartache of divorce. You can stop being paralyzed by student loans and credit card debt and alimony payments. And you can be reminded that whatever happens, God is for us, He is with us, and my heart will not fear. And though war rise against us, and in spite of this, I shall be confident. Verse 3. Not our fears, not our mistakes, not our adversaries, or not our adversities, but our lives find their meaning of God. And when we wait on God, we are able to be unafraid. For in the day of trouble, He will conceal me in His tabernacle. Verse 5. We begin to have confidence in God as our hope and meaning in our lives begin to grow faith. And it's in the waiting that we discover God. As He will lift us up on the rock above our enemies in verse 6. And we realize that we're going to be okay, and we're becoming who God made us to be. We may be cracked, we may be dusty, we may be even prone to wander off, but put back together, cleaned off, and never alone. And so we wait, we rest, we stay, we slow down, we take a deep breath, and then we begin to slowly start to trust. We slowly start to grow. And in that waiting, a wonderful thing happens. We're soon able to sing praises again, as David was in verse 6, as he gave us encouragement. Some of you have not been able to sing praises for so long. I've watched you. You sit out here and watch the praise singers sing. No praise comes from your lips. But you're able to sing praise again. Sue Monk tells a story of an experience she had in a monastery. She says she was watching this monk sit perfectly still beneath this tree. And there was such reverence in the silhouette that she was watching, such tranquil sturdiness. And as she paused to watch, he was a perfect picture of waiting, just sitting there. And so later she sought him out. She said, "You know, I saw you sitting beneath that tree, just sitting there so still." She said, "I don't understand how you do it. How can you sit so patiently still in that moment?" She said, "I can't get used to the idea of sitting there and doing nothing." And he broke into this wonderful grin and he looked at her and he said, "Well, there's the problem right there." He said, "You've bought into this cultural myth and when you're waiting, you're doing nothing." And he took his hands and he placed them on his shoulders and he peered straight into her eyes and he said, "I hope you'll hear what I'm about to tell you, and I hope you'll hear it all the way down to your toes." He said, "When you're waiting, you're not doing nothing. You're doing the most important something that there is. You're allowing your soul to grow up. If you can't be still and wait, you can't become what God created you to be. Wait for the Lord and be strong and take heart. Wait for the Lord. Whom shall I fear? Wait for the Lord." Because it's in the waiting, it's in that waiting that you start to worship so you can become strong, and then you can start and begin to take heart. And that's where it starts.
Those who wait on the Lord don't go anywhere. They don't move forward. They don't turn back. They wait. Wait for God to answer. Wait for the Father to provide. Wait for the Avenger to act. For the hurt to stop. For the door to open. But sometimes, in the waiting, in the stubborn trusting without seeing, we find an unexpected moment, and then another. An unreasonable peace, a surprising joy, a shocking sense that the answer matters less than being loved by the one we're waiting for. And so we worship in the waiting, and we wait a little more.
Stand this morning with us. I don't know if you're facing any giants. I don't know if you're facing any mountains this morning. But I do know one thing, that God is able and He'll never let you go. Maybe you're facing a job situation that's really tough to endure. Maybe you're waiting that the conditions will change for the better. And maybe you're without a job this morning, waiting for news on an application. Maybe that you're going through some illness or have a loved one who is. Or maybe you're waiting for their health to improve. Or maybe you're facing something that you're going to go through an illness or a procedure. Or maybe you're waiting for a loved one or a child to become interested in spiritual things. Psalm 62:8 says, "My soul waits in silence for God only. For my hope is in from Him. He only is my rock and salvation. My stronghold, I shall not be shaken. On my God, my salvation, my glory rest. The rock of my strength, my refuge is in God. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. Now is the time."